Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest today is Irina Lagunina, senior correspondent with RFERL's Russian service. Welcome, Irina. Thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you.
All right. Two topics today. Russia delivered a familiar message at the annual Munich Security Conference this past weekend, accusing the West of stoking tensions and maintaining that Moscow poses no threat. At home, the process of changing the constitution continues, but it's not moving as fast as it did out of the gate. Let's talk about Munich first. President Vladimir Putin delivered a now famous speech at the annual event in 2007, setting the tone for tension that, with one or two periods of relative warmth in between, has mostly risen in the 13 years that have now passed. Now, since then, it's usually been Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov delivering the main remarks from Russia at the Munich conference, and they've become kind of familiar. This year was no different. Lavrov criticized what he called, quote, the stoking of tension, the advance of NATO's military infrastructure to the east, military exercises of unprecedented scale near Russia's borders. And he said, quote, before it's too late, you should abandon the phantom of the Russian threat. Now, this was a speech in which he did not mention the war in eastern Ukraine, which is one of the reasons that many in Europe and the West believe that Russia does pose a threat. And now, also in Munich, one of Lavrov's deputies, Alexander Grushko, who's also a regular guest, set out conditions for improved relations between the EU and Russia. So it seems to me, with those conditions and the things that Lavrov spoke of, the main message from Moscow, as in past years, was that the ball is in the West's court. Russia's ready for better ties, but it's up to Europe and the United States to make it happen. Irina, what do you think this year's Munich Security Conference provided any signs that ties between Moscow and the West could improve, or are positions hardening?
Frankly, I think that there was no change at all. And I read the official statements after the conference, and this is how they see it in Moscow. Mm-hmm. The foreign ministry spokesperson, Maria Zakharova, for example, said that that there was no clear message in Munich, that there was no clear agenda, that I'm quoting, that every leader behaved as if it he or she was running for the presidential campaign, and so on and so forth. The message that Lavrov delivered is being repeated by Moscow ever since 2014, mm-hmm. Because ever since the annexation of Crimea, I think the main goal of it is to show that Russia is not going to abandon what it sees as status quo with Crimea, that Russia will not go further mm-hmm. if Crimea is accepted by the West, Crimean current status is accepted by the West, and that the West should agree to what it is mm-hmm. and move further. To some extent, this happened when Council of Europe once again allowed Russia to participate in its activities, mm-hmm. In spite of the fact that there was no change to Crimea. And I think that taking into consideration the second topic that we are going to discuss here, sure. I think it's all together, the message is to the message that Kremlin wants to deliver to the West is we're here for a long time. It's not going to change, neither in presidential position in Russia or the Kremlin ownership in Russia, nor in Crimea.
Right.
So just accept it and let's move further.
Mm-hmm.
And also, partly, I think the idea of repeating this message to the West is also addressing the domestic mm-hmm. audience, because of course, with the media tightly controlled by Kremlin, the message will be portrayed as Kremlin wants it.
Right.
And the message that the Russians got through state media is that Russia is a peaceful country. Russia wants peace everywhere. Russia is the main peacekeeper in the world. Mm-hmm. And the West is creating all the problems and all the tensions in the world and all the hostility. And, you know, so it's very much domestic message as well as foreign, even though it's in Munich.
Absolutely. And I think this idea of Russia being the peacekeeper for the world has come up, I think, more and more often in the past, I don't know, this past year. And also that's how I believe Lavrov, and of course Russia portrays itself in Syria, which does not really correspond with what a lot of, you know, people in the West see as Russia's role in Syria right now. But certainly they portray themselves as a peacekeeper or somebody who's out to create conditions for peace.
And by the way, Maria Zakharova, continuing with her, also mentioned on her page on Facebook, mm-hmm, the apparent improvement of the U.S.-Russian relationship, mm-hmm, because she wrote, and let me quote, it's not a joke, it's a direct quote from Maria Zakharova. Pompeo left Lavrov and said loudly over the corridor, "Good luck." Those standing next to the Russian conference room, those participants of Munich conference who were standing next to Russian conference room gasped.
Yeah.
It's rare that Americans wish something good to somebody right now.
Yeah, that was certainly a fun way or interesting way for her to kind of spin that meeting, was talked about a lot in the U.S. media, I think, because I believe the State Department didn't mention that it took place, and it kind of the fact that it did came out from the Russian statements about it. Well, if you look at the photo, it's not really clear that people are gasping when they see Pompeo walking there. But yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think part of it is part of that. Very good to point out, but part of that is the kind of attempts by Zakharova and Russian officials to kind of play U.S. and Europe off against each other, which is something that gets a chance to do at the Munich Security Conference.
But also the very fact of participation in such events. I mean, there are not that many international events that Russia is participating right now, or in Russia is invited to participate.
Absolutely.
Right now. So the very fact of participating is an attempt to legitimize all Russian actions in the view of Russian public.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a very important component also that we shouldn't forget, probably.
That's very true. I mean, I think, you know, Russia's out of the G8, you know, which is now the G7. The opportunities for this kind of thing, for Russia to tell its own people, for one thing, that, you know, that it's part of the world, a big part of the kind of world security system, you know, they're not as common now. So and Munich's certainly a way to get that message across to the Russian audience at home. Now, you mentioned Lavrov saying that, or Zakharova rather, saying that it seemed like all the other participants were running for president of their respective countries. Now, one person we probably might not, you know, might be safe to say isn't going to be running for president anytime soon is Lavrov. But that might be a segue to the second topic about the constitutional amendments that are now going through the process of being approved in Russia. The deadline, I believe, for suggestions for the constitutional amendments to add to Putin's proposals that he made in his January 15th State of the Nation speech and then in a formal legislation submitted to the Duma later. It was supposed to be last week, I believe, and I think the second reading of the legislation on the changes was also supposed to be around now, possibly last week or this week. But those dates have been pushed back. It's unclear when the second reading will be held. I think it's possibly next week, but I don't think the date has actually been set yet. And meanwhile, some attention-grabbing ideas have popped to the surface. I mentioned the president issue because, you know, one of the things that these constitutional amendments that are being proposed have generated a lot of talk about is the idea that Putin could continue to rule or hold a large amount of power in some other position other than president after 2024 when his current term runs out and the current constitution prevents him from running for re-election. Putin's proposals themselves create some pathways for him to potentially hold power. The state council, beefing that up and making it official is one way. And then the rearrangement of the kind of the balance of power between the parliament and president, although that's another way. And now there's also apparently a proposal made informally or made by we don't really know who, but to create the position or title of supreme leader, which would be obviously, if that was taken seriously and implemented, you know, obviously that would be another way for Putin to hold power. I believe the Kremlin reacted by saying Dmitry Peskov, Putin's spokesman, said, you know, he had no opinion about it and sort of presented this as, you know, one of the ideas being thrown around. Now, Irina, aside from the proposal that Putin made in his address, I mean, some others have been mentioning God in the Constitution, I believe mentioning marriage as being between a man and a woman in the Constitution. Now, some of these proposals, aside from the ones that Putin made in his address, do you think any of the others are likely to actually be included in the Constitution? And if not, or even if so, what's the point of this kind of now a somewhat more drawn out process of collecting these proposals?
Yeah, right now there are about 500 proposals, and the work continues. By the way, God was something that was kind of said initially. Now they went even further. For example, there are proposals to write into constitution that no president or Russia itself should never abolish nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
To write into the constitution that Russia is the country that won the Second World War.
Right.
To write into the constitution that no parts of Russia can be given away by any future leader of the country. So the mind is working.
Yeah.
You know, it's boiling. It's boiling. It's producing every day. And of course, with, this type of creativity regarding the Constitution, you probably cannot meet all the deadlines.
Right.
So you have to postpone the consideration of what's been put in there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody understands in Russia, and when I say everybody, I read social media, people do discuss this topic a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the topics that probably didn't spark any major public outcry, but at least outcry in social media and on what we call in Russia kitchen level, kitchen talk, which is always political in Russia, that topic is really, really, important for people. And people understand that whatever is written in this constitution, whatever amendments are made, all this has only one goal. And this goal is to ensure that not only Putin, but also his team, his people, are in power forever. Now, the recent developments in Russia make people to believe that, this is not only the question of power right now, the question of a person being, one particular person being in power, but it's the question of the structure of the society, the structure of power that will come after this amendments to the Constitution. And, you know, we really don't know what the amendments will be.
Right.
Because you can throw in 1,000 ideas, mm-hmm. but at the end you may, and I think that that's what's going to happen, we will be left with what Kremlin wants to put in there.
Right.
And what amendments Kremlin made, and not not this group of respectful people that are working on this.
Right.
So, when I say the recent developments, I mean the sentence to so-called network mm-hmm. group, practically life sentence. Or half of their lives they will spend in prison for something that they didn't do, for something that we don't really know whether they discussed or not,
right?
For something that they confessed in under torture.
Right.
And I think that even though there were several several pretty bad cases in Russia, like imprisonment after Bolotnaya Square protests, mm-hmm. imprisonment after Moscow protests this last summer. But the network case is absolutely unique in terms of harshness, in terms of you know, the methods with which the whole so-called investigation was done, with horrible tortures
right.
that was documented by the lawyers, documented by the witnesses, but were not even considered by the court at all.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a message to the society that this group in group in Kremlin right now is consolidating power, and that no dissent will be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
From now on, if we could call Kremlin an authoritarian state, I think Russia is moving very quickly to totalitarian state right mm-hmm. now. And no, Lukashenko is not the last dictator in Europe anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's an amazing case, really. The way the torture, you know, allegations, the accounts of torture by the defendants came out, you know, very open, and as you say, not considered by. You know, it's like there are two different processes going on. And the timing, you know, I think is quite interesting. This is, you know, the constitutional amendments. This is sending a signal. This network case sending a very, very strong signal to society. And at the same time, some of the amendments that will presumably be adopted are the kind of the so-called social ones, which including indexing pensions, putting that sort of thing in the Constitution, some of which is already in the law anyway, and so it's more for PR purposes. But I think, so you have these two messages of, okay, it's almost going back to, I guess I would say, going back to the idea of, you know, we're going to try or promise to give you, you know, some kind of social security, and in return, you cannot speak out. There can be no, you know, no dissent. And, you know, as you mentioned, it's unclear. I mean, with the Bolotnaya, obviously, it's clear that these people who were protesting against the Kremlin, against Putin, against his plan to come back. Here, you know, the defendants say they basically didn't do anything. So
they didn't even know each other.
Right. So, you know, that's one of the ways the message is, well, you know, there's no way of knowing when you're going to be, you know, what might happen. So that's unique, as you say.
I think that with all this process right now, Kremlin is trying to make a new accord with the society. If before the accord was, I will bring you stability and you support me, then it has never been prosperity, by the way, stability. Then right now, with the economic decline of Russia and with the oil money ending or ended already, extra oil money, the accord is, I will feed you, but you keep silent and support me. And this is basically an accord of socialist or communist state that I've been, you know, living in
right.
During my childhood.
It's certainly, you know, it's very striking imagery. And, you know, thanks very much for your for your insights. Let's wrap it up for today. Thanks very much, Irina. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. I'll be back next Monday. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for the Week in Russia, my newsletter about recent events and what they might mean going forward. Thanks for listening.